So welcome everyone to the show. Welcome back to Redacted. It's been a little while.
It's been 2 weeks since a live show, but we appreciate those of you who have watched the content that we put together while we are away. We're glad to be back live here with you. We did a little traveling, a little time with our family, and a lot of soul searching about the show. We talk about the show a lot.
Yes.
I just want to let you know we have the best of intentions as we bring you this information here.
That's right. So is Philip here? Is David here? I never know what the scenario will be on the live show. Producers in the booth.
I do believe
I'm here.
I think
we have a team of them. But
I do
sound off if you are here as a producer.
If you are here, let us know.
I do believe I am here, but I don't know if you can hear me.
I can hear you.
Philip
is here.
You.
All right, Philip is here. David decided to try this new using Telegram for the team to communicate, but it's like no one responds when we're all on iMessage. We're all, and then you throw me a curveball, and now we're all using Telegram as the team to communicate.
Okay.
But then I put a message in Telegram, and then no one responds to me. Or then they have to alert me that, hey, did you see my messages in Telegram? Go over there and check that out.
That's an if it ain't broke scenario.
Yeah. Now it's like, you know what?
Why don't
I send you a carrier pigeon? That'd probably be an easier way for us to communicate. How about that? Or a smoke signal.
Yeah. In the chat, do you
and
hear
also we have...
Philip? They do, right? I want to make sure we're not having a conversation with nobody.
Can you hear Philip?
I can hear him.
Okay,
I'm asking the chat because Jamaica said, Philip, are you here? So I wanted to make sure that we're not just having a conversation with nobody, which won't be awesome to watch.
Yeah, everyone can hear us in the chat. You know, when the studio is dark for 2 weeks, like, I don't know if there's like cats get in here. I don't have any cats. But I don't know if they chew on cables. You never know that kind of stuff.
Things
you know?
Seem to be working.
Yeah. Like when I used to do on Fox and Friends, we'd travel for like a week and we'd come back to the main studio. We'd be covering the convention or Democratic convention or Republican convention. And then we'd come back to New York City into the main studio. And then it's like all hell breaks loose. Like microphones don't work and it's all kinds of craziness. So,
well, we'll see. We're here. We're talking to you.
All right, so we do have a jam-packed show for you. We've got a very special guest we're going to be getting to in just a moment. But we do want to tell you that's very, very important. We have a website. And as you know, these globalists like to clamp down and censor content on a regular basis. I was heartbroken. I won't go into the story, but a friend of the show messaged me over the weekend, totally blocked and censored and demonetized. And so this is happening. This is real. And so we have a website. It's called redacted.inc. It's a place that we've built separate from all of the global media corporations that we sadly have to rely on. It's our own website. You can go over there and become a member for free. You can sign up. Just go to redacted.inc. And also, they've got some good stuff over there that we get early for them as well.
Yes, so we have content that are maybe not kosher on certain platforms that we put there, plus other early access to content that will come to other platforms. So we try and give you a lot of Easter eggs for joining our community, and we appreciate your support.
That's right.
You know, I do want to say, I think that one of the biggest takeaways is whenever we take a break from the show and we get out of our bubble, because our bubble includes, you know, taking our kids to school and interacting with just a set number of people. And then we do a lot of reading and research for this show, and we can get into the mindset of like, oh my gosh, so many people are wrong about the world. The world is so divided, right? And then you go out into the world, outside of your bubble. And I realize, like, humanity is full of a lot of, like, pretty good people, I would say. And when you see people you know that you might disagree with, or maybe wearing a shirt with a political slogan, and you're like, I don't hate that person. I just don't agree with your shirt. And I would like to broadcast in a more inclusive way to, like, speak to people who I don't like their shirt with understanding. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And a lot of the books that I read over our trip made me really realize how same but different, you know, I am from other cultures, and how I really just, I don't want to broadcast this show from just my perspective. I want to be empathetic to all perspectives. And if I haven't done that in the past, I want to do it better now.
So that's your mission statement. Mine is, I just want the truth. I want the truth out there. And I think we are fighting an uphill battle. And I want to go wherever the truth takes us. That's always the mission of this show, right? And so as facts present themselves, we present the facts without an agenda. And also one other big agenda we are on the show is absolutely anti-war. So I have no qualms about saying from the very beginning of this show, we have absolutely stood firm against war. And of course, we are pro-peace. But pro-peace is not a positive thing for globalists right now.
No, so. And as we start to research these pieces for the show today, I again wanted to crawl into my bubble and say, I don't want to believe these things. I want to believe all of these things that we're coming up and researching. And I want to believe that what ABC News tells me is true. And as I go deeper and deeper, I'm like, I can't believe that. But gosh, I want to, because that would be so much easier.
Wouldn't it be easier if we could all just like sit back and the only thing we watched is like CNN? We're like, hey, this is great, right? This is, wow, one news source. But we can't do that, can we? Because we know how much and often these corporate media companies lie to us, and they foment an agenda that is absolutely actually destroying us, I think.
All right, so let's get to the things that we've been talking about. And if we don't meet our mission statement, we ask you to hold us accountable and let us know how we either have been insensitive or missed something. We appreciate that when you do.
When you open that can of worms, how have we been insensitive? Let us know in the chat. I'm sure we'll hear. Please just go easy on us.
Within reason. I mean, don't spend your preoccupied time about this. But.
Okay. All right. Well, we have got a very busy show for you. So I do want to start tonight. Let's start with what unfolded in Syria. What has been unfolding in that country over the past couple of years? This is an important story for all of us to consider. For those of you who think that the U.S. can support sides of a conflict with impunity, thanks to the U.S.-led proxy war in Syria, Syrian citizens are starving, their towns destroyed. It could take generations to rebuild this country. We're very lucky tonight to have a special guest with us, Vanessa Beely. She's an independent journalist, one of the finest journalists in the world. If you're not following her work, you absolutely should. We need more of her in this world. She is joining us from Damascus, Syria tonight. It's very late over there right now, so we want to be respectful of your time and get you out of here on a decent hour. Vanessa, great to have you back here on the show. Thanks so much for joining us. Your work is really, what's the best way to describe it? Like
brave,
and there's literally shining a light where we need it most. And there's just there's very few of people like you doing the work that you're doing. So I really, really mean that from the bottom of my heart. So you and I were communicating earlier today as we look at what's unfolding with Syria. And of course, last night, the United Nations failed to reach this compromise that would have basically extended this, quote, humanitarian aid for another year. So let's unpack this story. It's complicated. It's important. And if you read the Western media, you will be lied to and you will not get an accurate assessment of actually what's going on there. So what happened yesterday?
Well, yesterday, basically, first of all, I would not call this Syria aid. I would call it aid for Al-Qaeda. And of course, Al-Qaeda has been described by Jake Sullivan and Ambassador Jeffries as an asset to the U.S. in Syria in their mission to overthrow the legitimate Syrian government. The president was reelected in May 2021. With an overwhelming majority, whether you believe in that majority or not, he is supported by the majority of the Syrian people. So what happened was effectively very much as the last time that there was a vote in the UN Security Council over the establishment or the maintenance of the last remaining official humanitarian border crossing at Bab al-Hawa between Turkey and Syria. Western media would have you believe that Russia completely criminally prevented or vetoed this humanitarian aid crossing. But this is where the context needs to come in. Bab al-Hawa is controlled exclusively by Al-Qaeda. So whenever you see American officials visiting Bab al-Hawa, they won't enter Syria, but they'll go to the Bab al-Hawa crossing and they'll do photo shoots with the white helmets and various other alleged officials at Bab al-Hawa to push the fact that they want this humanitarian crossing kept open, why do they want it kept open? Because it provides essential revenue for their asset in Syria, which is Al-Qaeda. And you have to combine this, of course, with the organization established by Al-Qaeda called Watad, W-A-T-A-D, that processes, that has monopoly over the processing of Syrian oil that is stolen directly by the United States coalition and its proxies, which include the Kurdish Contras and ISIS. I mean, that's another point to come on to. So effectively, it's in the U.S. coalition interest to keep this humanitarian corridor open. It provides revenue for Al-Qaeda. It provides an entry point for weapons to the armed groups established in Idlib and that control Idlib, dominated by Al-Qaeda or Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which is the latest rebranding of Al-Qaeda to try and sort of distance it from its terrorist identity in Western public opinion. So effectively what Russia is doing here, it's trying to minimize the amount of time that this border is extended each time, because and it's also calling for two monthly briefings on what the humanitarian corridor is being used for, which is utterly correct. But what Russia is also trying to do, of course, is to enable the return of all Syrian territory to the control of the legitimate government in Damascus. So the other half of Russia's proposal, apart from reducing it from 12 months to 6 months to enable evaluation and not to enable this crossing to be extended to a point where it has potential to enable the armed groups to carry out a new aggression, for example, against the Syrian Arab Army positions in southern Idlib. But also what Russia is trying to do is to establish humanitarian aid coming from Damascus to secure points on the border of Idlib to then be transported into Idlib. So effectively giving the control back to the Damascus government rather than to Turkey and to the UN, which, of course, the UN is effectively an extension of US coalition power anywhere in the world, but particularly in Syria. So Russia's role really is to clamp down on terrorist activities, terrorist revenue, incoming weapons. And of course, we know that many of the weapons that are being supplied to Ukraine are ending up in Syria via the dark web. So it's a very real danger at the moment that some of the more sophisticated weapons that are ostensibly being sent into the Ukrainian army are being picked up and brought into Syria, into Idlib, readying the terrorist groups there, again, as I keep repeating, dominated by Al-Qaeda. As Brett McGurk said, Brett McGurk, that's the word. It's late.
I was going to say, we'll forgive you. Yeah. It's almost midnight in Syria where you are. So.
Yeah, and I get up at 5 most days, so my brain starts to kind of freeze at this time. I apologize. It's the largest Al-Qaeda haven since 9/11. Wow. So that gives you some of the background that you're simply not going to be told by Western media, who will use this as another opportunity to criminalize Russia.
Right, that's exactly what we saw today, right? So most headlines for Western media consumers said that Russia blocked aid to Syria because it is just a straight evil thing to do, and that's what Russia wants to do. When in fact, Russia and China put forth another measure which would only allow this continuation for 6 months and then a new supply route to be established, and that was vetoed by everyone else, right? And so you went into it a little bit. You said that the United Nations is an extension of the United States and their wish list, right? But why would the media then care to report it in that way?
Well, I mean, I think I've said it quite often. I think Western media now is actually even more brazenly than before an extension of intelligence, security, military agencies, government agencies, and it simply follows the roadmap of whatever government is in power at the time. We've seen that. We went from Obama to Trump to Biden, and effectively the roadmap in Syria has not changed. The methods of imposing that roadmap have changed marginally, but the media has consistently supported whatever the foreign policy is of whatever government is in power in the United States. And also, more directly now, is proving itself to be controlled, particularly in the UK. I follow UK media. BBC, for example, is proving itself to be really nothing more than an extension. They're becoming hitmen for intelligence agencies now, nothing more than that.
Yeah, and you and I talked in a, and I would encourage all of our viewers to go and watch. You and I had a deeper conversation in our redacted conversations piece where we spent about an hour talking about both Syria and China. The BBC's hit piece there on China was remarkable. So yes, we're seeing that in the Western media. You you sent out a Telegram message on this, and I thought that this was poignant. This new Los Angeles Times piece from like 2016, which was already a few years old at the time, but I want you to contextualize this for us. It says, in Syria, militias armed by the Pentagon fight those armed by the CIA. So for viewers watching right now that don't understand, we were literally funding and providing arms to both sides.
Right. In fact, this Los Angeles Times article talks about how there's sort of a clash of three sides, right? The internal fighting plus the uprising against the Assad government, and that how that made it difficult for the United States, which was funding two different conflicts. We knew that at the time. We seem to have forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there continues even now to be a clash between intelligence agencies and military agencies, for example, whether it's UK or US. They're each backing different factions inside Syria as a supposed alternative to, again, I say it, the legitimate government in Damascus. So you're getting clashes between, for example, factions like HTS, which is Al-Qaeda, used to be Nusra Front, and, for example, groups like Ar-al-Sham. Ar-al-Sham now are more heavily backed by Turkey, for example. So I tend to see it, rather than seeing them as terrorist groups, I tend to see them as mafia organizations that are being controlled by different bosses and are looking to achieve status and power and financial gain, etc., territory, and recognition on an international stage. So they're all vying for power within, as you pointed out, the war to remove the Syrian government and to secure resources, including oil and water and natural gas, hydrocarbons, etc., which Syria is rich in, and also to steal the agricultural abundance in Syria, both through their terrorist proxies, but also directly. Again, you know, the U.S. is responsible for the burning, particularly under the Trump administration, of swathes of wheat and barley, agricultural lands. And yes, all of this comes down to the isolation of a central Syria, surrounded on almost all borders by either the U.S. coalition and proxies or by Turkey and the terrorist groups that Turkey is controlling. And coming back to the humanitarian corridor, I myself went, I think it was last year, to Afrin, which is on the front lines with Idlib. So it's one of the last villages before, under the control of the Syrian army. And that was established, that line was established during, by the Russia-Turkish brokered ceasefire. At that front line, we were being attacked by weapons supplied by the US. How can I say that? Or manufactured in the US, right? Because right, I was presented with unexploded missiles that had targeted us, wow, targeted us because surveillance was provided by Turkey. So that is how complex this conflict is, only in Idlib, only in this northwesterly corner. And that's why Russia is trying to play a kind of very complex, very intelligent game here to try and limit the amount of incoming weapons, soldiers, terrorists through the Bab al-Hawa crossing. And the UN is perfectly well aware of what goes on at Bab al-Hawa. It's impossible that it isn't. US officials that visit there are perfectly well aware of what is going on. So they are effectively protecting US coalition assets by wanting the humanitarian crossing kept open for longer periods with less checks and balances on how it's being managed. Russia is saying, no, we want it for shorter periods of time, and we want better controls on what is coming in and how it is being distributed to civilians, because that's another thing. Al-Qaeda, and they've done this throughout all the occupied zones that they controlled, they store the goods, the humanitarian aid that is coming in, and then they sell it. They trade it at extortionate prices to those civilians. So very often civilians are left without anything, but it's always portrayed as being the fault of Russia or the Syrian government, whereas in reality, the Syrian government and Russia are trying to find alternative mechanisms that will ensure that the Syrian people, the genuine Syrian people and refugees, receive the humanitarian aid. And of course, what Russia is also trying to do is to break the sanction block on the Syrian government protected areas of Syria, which is this internal 85%. Because if the aid is going to come from Damascus, then that means the UN is going to have to up its delivery of humanitarian aid to Damascus to enable the delivery to Idlib, if you understand what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Right now, under sanctions, much of that humanitarian aid that is entering Idlib is never sent to the people in the Syrian government-controlled areas because sanctions.
Yes.
So they're punishing the human beings, the Syrian civilians, in the central Syria,
right,
because they've supported their elected government, while they're enabling and facilitating revenue for Al-Qaeda and weapons supply to Al-Qaeda in the northwest. I mean, it's utterly reprehensible.
And
what Russia is trying to do is to point this out in a very diplomatic way, right?
Right.
I've actually heard today they have extended now for 6 months, so they finally accepted the Russian proposal.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that's the update.
Well,
then.
That's great news. But at least, but when will any of that aid actually get to the people? If you're just joining us, we're joined by amazing journalist Vanessa Beely, and the independent journalist who is in Damascus, Syria, covering this, has been covering this conflict for years. So what will happen to the Syrian people? I mean, this is ultimately the question, right?
Yes, because they don't have the benefit of, you know, a superstar conflict right now. So it is not as if people, there are countries that are crowdfunding aid for Syria, right? All of that sort of popularity contest is going to Ukraine right now. And we see that with Syrian refugees being shoved to the back of so many refugee lines. But is this the only hope that Syrian people have for aid, which is just government and government organizations?
No, I mean, look, Syria has survived 11 years of one of the most sort of protracted and vicious wars of attrition, hybrid wars. So military war, economic war, diplomatic war, media war, some of the most unprecedented and barbaric sanctions, particularly brought in under Trump, under the Caesar law. But of course, they have also very strong allies. They have Iran, they have Russia. I mean, we recently had a delivery of, I think it was 20 million barrels of oil from Iran, two tankers from Iran docked in Banyas, which is on the Mediterranean coast. Russia also has been very supportive. What people also don't understand, and it's maybe worth pointing out, because people do tend to call out Russia and say, well, why isn't Russia doing more? Why isn't China doing more? The reason that Russia and China are not publishing what they're doing for Syria is because they will get stung by sanctions. Remember that the Caesar Act sanctions penalize any country that comes to the assistance of Syria. I mean, this is one of the most absolutely illegitimate criminal mandates ever brought in my opinion, because it not only sanctions the people of Syria, but it sanctions any country that will come to the aid of the people of Syria. Right? So it's a double whammy here. So Russia and China keep everything.
Who put that?
Was brought in under President Trump. And that was brought in under the Caesar Act, which was based on a totally discredited CSER report, which began back in 2018 from memory. I could be wrong on that. But that was brought in. The CSER sanctions were brought in under the Trump administration. And under the Trump administration, the majority of the crops and the agricultural land was effectively scorched, right? And then Biden came in, and Biden immediately started bombing the Iraqi-Syria border, which is one of the few entry points for trade between Iraq and Syria, and also one of the few areas where the PMU, the Popular Mobilization Units or forces, gather in order to protect the border against ISIS. So again, the U.S. is effectively bombing those that are fighting ISIS in Syria.
Wow.
And I guess, you know, one last question is on this this oil. The U.S. has about 2,000 troops that are apparently, they say, guarding Syrian oil, guarding for the for the protection of the Syrians, I suppose. And so the aid can't reach the Syrian people. The oil, their very own oil, is being guarded by the United States. What do the Syrian people think of what the United States is doing there?
Well, I mean, you know, if you come to Syria, there is not one Syrian that will not explain to you fully what has been going on here for decades, which is effectively CIA and MI6 interference in their state affairs since Syrian independence in 1946 from the French mandate. America or the United States may claim it only has 2,000 troops, but of course it manages more than 5,000 ISIS terrorist fighters that are kept in holding camps and are then maneuvered around by the United States to carry out isolated attacks against Syrian Arab Army positions, civilian infrastructure, both in Syria and in Iraq, by the way. They attack electrical power stations in Iraq also. And then, of course, the Kurdish separatists, the Kurdish Contras, that are, again, in the pay of the United States. So while there are only 2,000 U.S. troops, they also have, at their beck and call, the Kurdish Contras and ISIS terrorist fighters, both of whom have benefited from the oil revenue over the time that they have ethnically cleansed and settled in that region. And actually, Victoria Nuland recently stated a U.S. intention to build settlements onto the northeastern territory of Syria. So effectively, the U.S. is now officially trying to annex Syrian territory, and Syrian territory, which of course contains the majority of the oil resources. But also for people to understand, Turkey has control, it has total hydro hegemony, it has control of the water sources, particularly to the northeast, but also to the north and northwest, even to Aleppo. And it can cut those water supplies at any time, and it has done that in Hasaka. So it's deprived 2 million people of water in the northeast in Hasaka. So you have the absolute piracy of Syrian resources on all levels, agricultural, water, oil.
So, oh, good. The United States is going to annex Syria and set up another state there. But they won't give them states' rights. It'll become a territory, and it'll just unbelievable. Just as I'm going through data on Guam and the Philippines and Puerto Rico, and you think about all of the territories that the United States has annexed over the years, and of course, just makes you sick to your stomach to think what's happening there.
You know, I have noticed, this is just something I notice when I don't have enough historical context for something, I go to Amazon and I say, oh, I wonder if there's a book I can read. But this is something where books on the Syrian conflict do seem to me suppressed by search results.
And that's not a conspiracy theory.
And I wonder, is that me? Is that my something to do with my cookies or what have you? So I'm going to ask you for a recommendation of something that I can, because you know, we hear all of the time all of the propaganda around Assad and that type of thing that comes out of the Western media. So can you tell me anything that you suggest to read that's more along the lines of this, what you just told me that Syrian people say that CIA and MI6 interfere and have been since the 1946 independence? Is there more context we can get about that.
Or are Natalie's cookies give me just, homework? Or Natalie's cookies just totally stale? She's not gonna.
Could be that.
Yeah, there are a couple of books. One I would recommend, which might sound a bit Patrick Seal is a very good author, and I'm desperately trying to remember the name of his book, but he spent a lot of time with Bashar al-Assad's father, Hafez al-Assad. So if you look up Patrick Seal in Syria, you'll find the title of the book, and I apologize that
it's
I
just,
can't remember
it off
the top
of my head. Well, there's one called The Struggle for Syria, and there's just Assad as well. Okay.
There's another one by an American academic called David Lesch, L-E-S-C-H, and that is called The New Lion of Damascus. Now, what's really interesting about this book was this was written pre-2009 or maybe around 2009. And I always challenge people to find any international criticism of President Assad prior to 2009 when he turned down the Qatari US-backed pipeline in favor of the Iranian-Russia pipeline. And David Lesch wrote this book at the kind of watershed moment. So it's actually a very positive review of the president's reformist progressive presidency. So it's worth reading. He did do a complete flip in 2012. I would argue that that was influenced by US foreign policy at that time. He won't actually engage on that subject, so I can't talk for David Lesch, but that would be my opinion on it. Another very good book is Stephen Gowan's Washington's Long War on Syria. And that gives you quite a lot of the history that I've talked about that goes back to 1946. It goes before that, but I've written about from 1946 until 2011 because I just found it absolutely horrific and kind of fascinating that the CIA has interfered from day one.
Yeah.
And carried out successive regime changes and coup d'etat and, you know, covert military exercises to influence policies in Syria. Syria is essential to the United States. Who controls the Middle East controls Eurasia. You know,
right.
that was said in Brzezinski's book, right?
Right.
And no other nation is more at the center of the Middle East than Syria. It's the hub of everything. It's the hub of the BRI, the Belt and Road Initiative. It's the hub of Assad's Five Seas project. But it's for America, for the United States, it's the prize in the Middle East, okay? Because it gives them control over Eurasia, and that's what they want, essentially. That's why Russia, the wars against or the interventions against Syria have always been to prize them apart from the Soviet Union and from Russia.
We had a question here. I wanted to get you out of here and let you get some bedtime.
No worries.
It's almost midnight there in Syria where you are. One of our viewers just asked in the chat here, what happens to the oil that the U.S. controls in Syria? What happens to that oil? We just heard that President Biden, you know, sold off the United States strategic oil reserves to China. In part. So what happens to the oil that's in Syria that the United States is guarding?
A lot of it actually ends up in Israel. it's traded out previously by ISIS, now by the Kurds, the Kurdish separatists. But it's the U.S. that transports the oil, by the way, out of Syria into Iraq. Then we assume some of it goes to Al-Qaeda, as I said, for processing, and then that's sold into Turkey. But I think it was Erdogan's son-in-law that was involved in the sale of Syrian oil to Israel historically. So I'm assuming it's still being hiked off to Israel, I would assume.
Well, one of our viewers says, yes, Vanessa Bealey live, most excellent. So that's what Brutally Remastered says in our chat right now. Yes, you are watching Vanessa Bealey joining us here on Redacted. We were just talking about some books that you should read on Syria. I would also encourage all of you to follow Vanessa on Telegram. That's where she's most active, I would say, posting over there routinely on her journalism, one of the best journalists in the world. Thank you so much, Vanessa, for joining us. Really, really appreciate you having being here on the show tonight.
No, thank you for getting me on to clarify that. I think it's really important. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Vanessa. And make sure all of you go and subscribe to her on Telegram. Thanks again to Vanessa's excellent journalism. We'll have her back again real soon. All right. So please, if you like that interview, please give us a like there and subscribe to the channel. We try to have amazing journalists like Vanessa here on the show on a regular basis.
Yes, that was a real treat to, you know, read this headline today that said Russia's the bad guy doing bad things again, and then to have someone who's actually in Syria rather than repeating what the United States government wants the media to repeat.
I mean, if you've read the Associated Press piece today on Syria, it's laughable how inaccurate it is. And this is what the American, and then that Associated Press piece then gets regurgitated all over the American press.
Yeah, sure.
You know, in newsrooms, yeah. They'll just copy and paste it and they'll publish it, and then that's what gets published. And
because it, you know, it gets clicks to click on another reason to hate Russia. Sure. Okay. On board, right?
It's totally lazy. We have got more news coming up here on the show. We're going to talk about Sri Lanka's collapse in a moment. You do not want to miss this story. We're going to look at President Biden's tanking poll numbers and how the White House is trying to cover up basically his mental decline. We're going to go into details on that. We've got a lot more to talk about. We're also going to look at Justin Trudeau and a couple of other stories. But first, I want to tell you about how you can get $10,000 in free silver right now. Now, this is a new sponsor on our show. They're going to be with us for a long time. I'm very excited about our friends over at Gold Co. If you want $10,000 in free silver, then listen up. If you have an IRA, a 401k, or a savings account, things are scary out there. But the Biden administration has already printed more money in the past 2 years than in the previous 100 years combined. That's right. 100 years, the Biden administration has printed that much money. Can you believe that? The national debt hit a record $30 trillion. And inflation is the highest we've seen since 1982. It's only a matter of time before the House of Cards comes crashing down. If you have a retirement savings, your money could be at serious risk. Talk to our friends over at Gold Co. That's G-O-L-D, Gold, C-O, to see how you can protect your retirement with gold and silver before it's too late. So all you need to do is go to their website, go to goldco.com. They're going to give you $10,000 or more in free silver when you open a qualifying account. So just go to goldco.com, and my friends at Gold Co. will give you $10,000 or more in free silver when you open a qualifying account. So check them out at goldco.com. Goldco.com. So our thanks to them for supporting the show. All right, let's talk about Sri Lanka. Now, we've been covering Sri Lanka on this show for a couple of months now. I don't think it's gotten a lot of coverage. In fact, when we started covering Sri Lanka, people were saying, wow, I can't believe you're covering this story. This is a big story. And the mainstream media was largely ignoring this story. This is what happens when you see corrupt politicians stealing money from their own citizenry, artificially, like literally taking millions of dollars in rupees and storing it inside the presidential palace, hiding it from the people, driving up gas prices artificially.
In the meantime, taking on debt from China, from private investors,
just but mostly from the United States.
From the United States, right, and allowing the country's national debt to increase while there was money being squandered elsewhere.
Look at these lines. I mean, these are lines of people in Sri Lanka that have been waiting for petrol, filling up, trying to get, you know, get access to run their businesses, to run their family, reducing the amount of meals that they have access to. And really unbelievable. So, of course, this weekend, every corrupt world leader should pay attention to what happened in Sri Lanka this weekend as the country now collapses. So the president, Rajapaksa, fled the country because of this happening. When you have thousands upon thousands of citizens saying, we can't eat, we can't get petrol, we can't provide for our families, and we're going to storm the presidential palace.
By many accounts, it was over 1 million people who came by train, bus, you know, however they could get there, and actually, you know, stormed, got their way in. You know, there was footage of protesters rolling on the president's bed.
Yeah.
Jumping on the bed, that kind of thing. It was just, we are not going to stand for this. In fact, many protesters say we are considering this date, July 9th, as our new Independence Day. The day we demanded the end of this administration and we will not leave until we get it.
So here's some video of them in the palace. They're at, and they went into the swimming pool. I mean, you see the tens of thousands of people there, but here you are at the presidential palace. Like, we're just going to jump into the pool. We're going to start swimming. We're going to use this. I hope they peed in that pool, by the way.
Maybe it looks like it doesn't look so clean.
But this is his personal this is his personal palace. Then, of course, they were rolling in the bed. So they went into the president's bedroom, lying in the bed. They were lying on the couch in the house, swimming. There they are, just taking photos and selfies in the bed. There they are in the swimming pool. That's the four-person bed. Here's on the couch, just like, I'm going to take a nap on your couch inside the presidential palace. And then one of my favorite, here's a guy, he's in there. I'm going to use your shower, Mr. President.
Is he shaving his stomach?
I don't know. How do I?
That's what it looks like.
Why would make you make that leap to that? Is he shaving his stomach? I think he's just showering. He's probably got a little soap.
Okay.
He's like, I'm going to use the presidential soap in the presidential shower.
Sure.
Here's my favorite photo. This is one of the most remarkable photos. It shows protesters in the presidential palace lying there, watching the protests on the television from the palace. Like, they're watching the live reports while they're laying there on the watching the TV in the palace. Isn't that crazy?
You know what strikes me about that photo is, you can leave it up a little bit, see if you see what I'm seeing. Well, that guy has a mask on that he's wearing under his chin. Like, why are you bothering with that? You're
right.
In a protest with millions of people and you've pulled it down. Like, maybe you just don't need to bring your mask.
Yeah, maybe the mask isn't
like
the
this.
Thing. It's like Jerry Seinfeld. Like, if you've got blood in your laundry, maybe Tide, or maybe your laundry isn't the most important thing. What is the joke? If
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I forget the joke. Does anyone, if everyone remembers the Seinfeld joke from the 1980s, because it's like Tide gets out blood stains. Like, if you have a lot of blood stains, then maybe laundry isn't your biggest problem.
Or, yes.
You know, maybe the mask isn't your biggest issue. Your country is collapsing.
Thanks for bringing it. Maybe he's worried that he needed it on public transit still.
Yeah.
Because some countries still require public transportation.
I don't know. But we now got word this afternoon. It had been reported, and then it was kind of got retracted, and now it's been reported again that, in fact, the president, Rajapaksa, was caught on camera fleeing on board a Navy vessel. Now we learn the president will resign his office so a new leader can take over. I mean, every corrupt politician around the world should pay attention. And take a look at this video. This is new video this afternoon of protesters storming the central bank of Sri Lanka. So it's not just the politicians, it's the bankers. It's the corrupt bankers that for years have, I mean, led this country into bankruptcy, all ruled by nepotism, corruption. Of course, you know, the context here, right? I mean, if you have like the brother, the former president of the country, who was, you know, by all accounts, stole millions of dollars from the government, from the people. By the way, so his brother, when he was president for, I think he was president for like 12 years, correct me if I'm wrong, he stole millions of dollars that were sent to his country for tsunami relief in 2004. Like, all these people are like, Sri Lanka, you're crushed under the tsunami. We're going to help you. We're going to send you millions of dollars. So he takes the money. He was caught money laundering. We're seeing payoffs from foreign companies with millions. This was all revealed in the Pandora Papers, by the way. The Pandora Papers found several of the president's family members had stolen millions of dollars from the government and hid them in offshore investment accounts. So the Pandora Papers, of course, continue to provide all sorts of Easter eggs about this. But again, this is what happens when corrupt politicians steal from the people.
Well, yes. But the most recent update is that the president actually has to, he can't just announce his resignation. He has to submit it in writing to parliament, which he has not done yet. So protesters are not actually doing a victory lap until they see that happen. Someone in the chat, Marty Reardon, says order out of chaos. And that, I think, is my biggest question. You hit the nail on the head, is will they then actually get a better politician? Will this be something that it, through a breakthrough is that they will get a breakthrough?
I hope so. I mean, look, I think this tweet says a lot here about, you know, Sri Lanka. I think to that order out of chaos point, Sri Lanka went on a money printing spree and had to witness the music slowing down. Inflation and out of control government spending were factors, plus the decision to ban chemical fertilizers. Do you think that what happened in Sri Lanka can't happen in your advanced country? and perhaps order from chaos. I mean, this is exactly what Thomas Jefferson talked about, right? Which is, if a government doesn't serve you, you throw off the shackles of that government and you start a new government. And this government for decades has hurt its people, has stolen money from its people. It has artificially driven up or, you know, the has driven down the value of their currency.
Yes.
It has made ridiculous deals with foreign banks and foreign governments like the United States and the UK specifically. And this is what happens when, you know, when people have had enough.
Right. When you pervert an economy for your own good, right? And you have too much power and none of that is in the interests of the people. Well, you shouldn't be able to hold on to that power. And so this is, it looks to us like a productive uprising, but it's too soon to say, right? So we can celebrate it, but we really don't know what to celebrate yet.
No, and we're going to talk more a little bit later in the show about what's going on in the Netherlands and in Canada. And I think in many ways, they're all related. All of this is related.
Yes, I think so, too. I'm interested in that chemical fertilizers piece because banning chemical fertilizer can collapse an economy. I don't know that link. Like, I don't know how to make that link. So I want to put a pin on that for another episode.
Good. Well, why don't you tell us about our friends, and then we've got more news to get to. So we are going to talk about what's going on in the Netherlands in just a moment. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to look at what's happening in Canada and how Justin Trudeau is ready to move lockstep with what's happening in the Netherlands. It's unbelievable. And there's a whole Bill Gates connection to all of this, by the way. You won't believe the Netherlands-Bill Gates connection. Something huge happened there last night in the Netherlands as it relates to Bill Gates. And the World Economic Forum, and all of it. I mean, it's all literally happening before our eyes, and they all predicted that it would happen. So we'll get to all of that and more. But first,
we want to tell you about our show sponsor, Bank on Yourself. Now, if you are like us and you are concerned that your retirement is actually tied to a government-type currency or a government-type program, well, then it's time to learn an alternative way. So do you really control your retirement money? If you have a 401k, it's what our friend of the show, Tom Realright, calls partnering with the government to invest in the stock market, right? A lot of times the same is true of an IRA, depending if you invest in these funds, right, that are set up for you. They're not really set up for you. They're set up for you and the government and the stock market to make money off of you. And of course, thanks to our skyrocketing national debt, who knows how much money your savings will be worth when it comes time to retirement. But Bank on Yourself is a better way to grow and protect your hard-earned money. This retirement plan alternative has never had a losing year in over 160 years. Now, this is something that I have studied quite a bit, and Clayton has too. It has guaranteed predictable growth and retirement income with no luck, skill, or guesswork required. In fact, Bank on Yourself has a 160-year plus track record of positive growth plus tax-free retirement income and liquidity. You get access to your money for any purpose with no questions asked. No volatility, and really it puts you in control. The only thing that is required of you is the desire to learn and the desire to open your mind to investments outside of what you were taught in commercials that are played during golf tournaments, basically, right? So you can get a free report with all the details on how adding Bank on Yourself to your financial plan can help you take back control of your money. Here's how you start your learning process and free your money from government control, basically. Go to bankonyourself.com/redacted. That's bankonyourself.com/redacted. We thank them so much for their support of this show.
All right, let's head to the Netherlands now.
All right.
Let me ask you this question. What do Bill Gates and the Dutch farmer revolt have in common? Well, buckle your seatbelts for this because this is unbelievable. If you live in America or Canada, you might have missed what's been happening all over the rest of the world. You know, there was a 4th of July holiday this past weekend in the United States. There was a Canada holiday as well last week, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know the Canadian holiday. I can barely keep track of the American holidays. But the Canadians, they had a holiday as well. So what's happening in the Netherlands is pretty important. And I think it has reverberations around the world. Farmers there are pissed that the Dutch government, what the Dutch government is doing. Here's how the great website Countersignal reported. I'm going to just put it up on the screen because they have a good job of explaining it here. The World Economic Forum controlled Dutch government announced last week an end to modern farming, putting harsh controls on nitrogen and spelling the end to thousands of family farms. In response, Dutch farmers took a page out of the Canadian Freedom Convoy playbook. They took to the highways, they blockaded borders, and they launched massive protests. And it's unbelievable. They actually took, so we have some video. They've been leading these trucker protests right into the backyards of the Green Left voters, which is a radical environmental party. So they basically got right on the road and they started driving these trucks full of manure right to government offices. These are full of cow manure.
Yeah.
Just dumping them right on government offices, their front steps.
Did they get that from Back to the Future?
Yeah, like with Biff. Well, is that Back to the Future 1 or 2?
I think it's 1.
Oh, that's 1. Yeah.
Where he skateboards and makes them run into the manure and it goes in the car.
And if dumping it's not enough, they're spraying it all over the place as well. So spraying manure everywhere.
Now, in these protests, I would suggest wearing masks.
Yes, wear masks during these protests. Wear your galoshes during this.
And gloves.
But this is what they're saying. Like, you know, and they argue that they're being targeted as polluters, right?
Well, okay, let's just go over what the law is, right? The new proposed laws would require farmers to cut their nitrous oxide emissions, which are largely produced by animal farming. And farmers are arguing, well, you know, why just us? Why do we start here? And these laws came about because the government was negotiating construction projects and they could not get them passed because already they were at carbon emissions limits, right? And so they said, well, then we're going to have to start to budget. So where should we go? They did not go to the construction industry. They started with farming because this chemical is released into the air when fertilizer soaks into the soil or water, and ammonia is produced through the urine and feces of animals that are farmed, right? Mm-hmm. Produced for farming. So the government is doing this to farmers first, and these farmers are arguing that they are being unfairly targeted as polluters when aviation can continue, plastics manufacturers, you know, other industries that also contribute to the same or more emissions are facing far less reaching rules. The government is also saying, you know, part of this rule is to reduce the national speed limit from 130 kilometers per hour to 100 mm-hmm. kilometers per hour. Like, is just during the day, is that going to do a whole lot? That for Americans is about 80 to 60 miles per hour.
Well, and so, you know, I mentioned Countersignal mentioned World Economic Forum, and that's not just like a conspiracy theory you throw around. I mean, the WEF, the World Economic Forum, that wants you to own nothing and be happy about it. That's what they said, right? That's what they said in their meeting. That's what they said as part of the global reset. That's what they want. They don't want you to own anything. And
right,
by the
which
way,
is
the
something
same...
that I would be fine with. Say, like, I like minimalism too. I like the idea of like not polluting the earth by consumerism. But they want us to own nothing and them to own everything, right? So
right,
it's not a like kumbaya, let's return to tribalism and take care of our local tribes. That's not what this is.
No,
you own nothing,
right.
But we will continue to build.
It's a consolidation of power, right? It's
yes.
The removal of power from you, from the individual, into the hands of global elites. And by the way, again, I come back to Rand Paul pointing this out in the Senate. This is what they've said in their meetings, that they voted on this at Jackson Hole. This is exactly what they want. This is, and the global elites repeatedly tell us this. So this is not a surprise. Even last week, we heard from Brian Deese at the White House saying that this is part of the new world, liberal new world order.
Yeah.
This is what they want, right? So
you
this is not a conspiracy theory.
You get used to
theory.
Less power in
right.
your life.
So journalist, I'm going to butcher her last name, but it's a Dutch last name. So help me here and forgive me. Her name is Eva. I hope I got that right. You never know. Eva, E-V-A. She's a journalist, and she was on Rebel News talking about this. And her last name is Vlaarden Lingerbroek. Varden Lingerbroek. That's definitely a Dutch last name. Did I say that right, Philip? Vlardingerbroek. Man, I'm going to call her Ava V.
Bueller.
Yeah, Philip's like, I'm not even saying anything on that one. So here is what she had to say on this global reset and specifically about the World Economic Forum, because the head of Netherlands is very, very cozy with the World Economic Forum. Listen.
Mark Rutte. Yes, Rutte. Mark Rutte is very, very deeply involved in the World Economic Forum. And, well, it's obvious that this law is a product, again, of these globalist institutions. Because this needs to happen before 2030. Rings a bell, right? Agenda 2030, the Great Reset, World Economic Forum. It's very clear that this is a made-up crisis, which we've seen before with these organizations. That's the way they handle, that's the way they operate these things. They say, we have a crisis, and you are the ones that are going to have to solve this by giving up all of your rights.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening here. They're taking away these farmers' land. They're taking away property because they see a future for us in which we're completely dependent on the state. You eat bugs and, well, they own your land. You own nothing and you'll be happy is what they say to you. But these farmers are not happy. And I'm so proud that they're fighting this.
So then the Bill Gates connection to all of this. What is the Bill Gates connection to all of this? Well, you might have, I don't know if you know that like last week he bought up 2,000 acres of land in North Dakota. He's now the largest landowner in the United States. So what happened, Kian Bexty reported this, a Bill Gates Foundation supermarket in the Netherlands that focuses on new age foods like plant protein, because he doesn't want you to eat any meat. He just wants you to eat his money-backed plant protein
genetically
foods. Right.
Modified or somehow factory made. Yes.
Right. So here's how Kian reported this. Breaking, a Bill Gates Foundation supermarket in the Netherlands that focuses on new age foods like plant protein meat has spontaneously caught fire in the middle of the night. And then this was the video. Take a look at this. This is the video of the fire at the Bill Gates food plant. Spontaneous in the middle of the night, going up in flames, by the way. And we've seen a number of these food production facilities on fire
now,
recently.
Now, do you think he's insinuating that it was set fire by protesters or set fire internally?
I don't know. Okay. I'll leave that. Hey, what do you guys think in the chat? Who set fire to this Bill Gates plant? You know, was it done by protesters? I mean, these have largely been, you know, peaceful protests, but it happens in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Now, there's been a lot of conspiracy theories online about, you know, food production facilities across the United States catching on fire and so forth. I've looked into this, and I can find no evidence to suggest that they are related in any kind of way. There's, this, just to give you one example, a small airplane crashing nearby a food production facility in a field was one of these, you know, then there's just random set, but they're not really related. If anyone has
as
any,
as far as you can tell,
as far as I can tell, I've looked into it. I've dug into it. I have a couple of sources on this as well. They can find no exact, you know, evidence of that, sabotage specifically, but if you do, please send it to me. But again, it seems like it's disparate and not really connected. But anyway, how is Bill Gates connected to all of this? So, I mean, here's his plant there catching fire in the Netherlands. And how is he connected to these farmers? Here is Eva again on this Bill Gates supermarket and why this is important. Listen.
It's not a real crisis. Obviously, nitrogen isn't a problem, especially not when you consider the fact that, well, the Netherlands, like I said, is such a small piece of land.
Yeah.
We have our neighboring countries, Belgium and Germany, that don't have to implement any of these measures, but the Dutch government is doing it. And the real reason, obviously, behind it is that the Dutch state wants the farmers' land. Because probably there are a couple of reasons. So the farmers, first of all, they're a group in society that are very self-reliant. They are basically ungovernable in that sense. You know, they own a lot of the Dutch land. And they, well, they produce agricultural products, they have livestock, they produce beef. And what's interesting to know is that the Dutch minister who has pushed this nitrogen law has a brother-in-law who is the owner of the Dutch online supermarket called Picnic. Guess who invested $600 million in Picnic last year? Right. Bill Gates, the man who wants you to eat fake meat.
The man who wants to eat you to eat fake meat.
I'm interested in how she's saying that Dutch farmers are very self-reliant and therefore sort of out of control of the government, right?
I love that. I'm glad you picked up on that. I was wondering because I saw your eyebrow lift up.
I'm just like, is that true? Because if so, that's a particularity of that government that I am not familiar with, because I know that in most developed nations, farmers are very dependent on the government through subsidies and restrictions and rules and all types of things. So I'm wondering, do they really operate as independently as she is saying?
It'd be interesting to see. I'd be curious to hear from our Dutch viewers. I know we've heard from a lot of folks in the Netherlands who've written to us saying, thank you for covering this story. Let us know. And they've also corrected us on pronunciation of their president, Rutte.
Okay.
But yes, let us know. Like, are they as independent as she's saying? And I think maybe she's speaking metaphorically that they live off the land. So they're not reliant on like the food source and food.
Perhaps, but we're talking about meat farmers mostly. We're mostly talking about meat farmers, and if you live on a diet of only meat, you're going to get gout, right?
Isn't
that what you get from what is it that the royals used to get from not eating?
Yes, but then you can watch. I mean, heck, David went an all meat diet for like 2 months and lost all kinds of weight. And you know, and we have other people like Jordan Peterson talking.
Okay,
about
I don't want to talk about nutrition. That's not where
you
I wanted
it
to
up.
Go. Right. Okay, but that was an aside.
Well, you just asked me a question about gout. All I'm saying is that there's
an anecdote.
Watch what Jordan Peterson has to say about, he went on the all meat diet. Even his daughter did a TED talk about it and then got banned from TED talks from talking about it. Anyway, I'm just saying, hey, I'm not going on an all meat diet anytime soon.
Okay.
But I'm just saying.
But I also just want to be careful about, presenting this story, because you don't want to be accused of being a climate change denier, right? And so anyone who is sort of a militant ecologist might say, well, there has to be a pain point in order to save the planet, right? And so why not start here? But I think that is really the question, is where do we start, right? Does the government then put the pain far away from itself and continue other wasteful ways, right? And so I'm interested in that piece of it, and along the lines of like how the government's used the pandemic to hurt small businesses, wage war on small businesses while reward their wealthy friends, right? Is the green movement another way that governments can disenfranchise small business in order to consolidate power? And in fact, I found a book today as I was researching this, which I will read, called False Alarm: How Climate Change Panic Costs Us Trillions, Hurts the Poor, and Fails to Fix the Planet. And so is this another way that the government is using a movement to hurt people that are not involved in government? The author of the book is Bjorn Lomborg. So read with me, if you will.
Yeah,
are you pointing out?
I was going to point out, but we missed it. But we had a new sub that agreed with you, a new subscriber. If you subscribe to the channel, your name will pop right up here on the channel.
How do we know that person agreed with me?
They subscribed the moment you were talking about this and about how like this, this climate change, the governments that push this stuff end up hurting poor people, and the stuff that they've been pushing hasn't been working.
Okay.
And it's actually been crushing businesses. It's been killing businesses, actually, as a result of it. But in a few moments, we're actually going to talk about this United Nations report on hunger, which you'll be stunned by as it relates to what's going on in Canada and the Trudeau government. So I think you'll have, once you see that it might make your eyebrows peak up too, because really, really stunning. Yes, you.
Okay.
Yes. Do you want to tell us about our friends? We're going to talk about Trudeau, and we're going to talk about President Biden's approval ratings, and we're going to show you what the White House is doing to basically cover up right now what President Biden's mental state. They are in deep trouble. Democrats are in deep trouble, and the White House knows it, and you have a number of people jumping ship, so we're going to go into those details in just a moment.
But first, we want to tell you about our show sponsor, Athletic Greens. Now, Athletic Greens is a product that is much used in the Morris household. In fact, we put it often in our smoothies. And it is just a way for us to super boost our nutrition and our immunity. So what is this stuff? Well, one spoon of delicious athletic greens has 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food sourced superfoods, foods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help start your day right. Now, this is a special blend of ingredients that supports your gut health because, of course, you know, most good bodily health starts in the gut. Also, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy. It helps with recovery, focus, and aging. All the things, right? All the things you want. It includes AG1. And of course, we use it all the time in our house by putting it in smoothies, especially we, you know, divide it up for the kids. They even have, it comes in travel packets that we take with us on the go. A lot of times because someone, I won't tell you who, but someone in our house suffers from a nervous stomach when we travel and doesn't always stay regular.
This guy.
When we go on trips.
Hey, I'm not afraid.
I don't want to say who it is.
Are you like me? When
Clayton can't poop on vacation.
I should do that as a commercial. Are you like me? Do you have trouble pooping when you travel? If so, it's true. I don't know what it is because you're flying and you're like, and you're not on a regular, then yeah. It's not regular, you know?
Clayton can't go when we're on vacation.
I got news for you. Everyone does it.
So but now he travels with Athletic Greens and that helps a whole lot. Because of the travel packs. So right now, if you'd like to try it, to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D, plus five free travel packs, those travel packs so you can poop on your vacation, with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/invest. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/invest to take ownership of your own health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. We thank them so much for their support of this show.
Hey guys, you know, I don't mention this often, but we went on vacation for a little while and we're back. But if you would do be so kind, it really, really helps with the algorithm if you would hit that like button. I don't know how many likes do we have right now. I think we've got 3,000 likes and we've got about 7,000 people watching, give or take. So please smash that like button. It really, really helps push us out in the algorithm and it helps with everything that we do here. All right.
Hang on, got the Stein out, guys.
All right.
It's that we're back.
Do it.
Okay.
You ready?
No one fights like Gaston. Okay, here we go.
All right, ready?
Yes.
All right, let's head north of the border to our favorite dictator, Justin Trudeau. And I don't know if he learned anything from the trucker convoy back a number of months ago that Canadians don't like when you take their civil liberties away. They don't like when you freeze their bank accounts. They don't like when they're being told what to do with their bodies. But I guess the Trudeau government didn't learn its lesson because now it's ready to fall in lockstep with what the Netherlands are doing and following the lead of the World Economic Forum in taking away land, taking away freedoms, and clamping down on farmers. So here is the press release from the Canadian government. And I'm just going to read. So keep this up on the screen if you would, Philip.
Do you want me to read it? Because you're squinting.
Sure. Government seeks guidance on path towards reducing emissions associated with fertilizer. Read the first paragraph.
Okay. Canadian farmers have shown that they are a good steward of the land and have long cared for the environment. They are key players in building a healthy environment and a more sustainable agricultural sector in Canada.
All right, now skip down to the third paragraph.
Okay. Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada met with producer groups and provincial and territorial partners in 2021 to discuss the emissions reduction target and initiate conversations on how to work together to develop a realistic approach. Stakeholders identified important opportunities and challenges for industry, which helped inform a discussion document that's hyperlinked that will stimulate discussion and lead to a shared understanding of how Canada will reach its 30% fertilizer emissions reductions target.
All of it, of course, from the World Economic Forum and what exactly we're seeing in the Netherlands right now with farmers, of course, dumping manure on the footsteps of government offices and buildings and setting up roadblocks with bags of manure over the border so you can't cross in there because they are fed up with these nitrogen cap limits, of course. And so now, I want to put this fertilizer quote up here. Again, this is from Countersignal. This is from the website Countersignal. They say, this is a tacit admission that any attempt to lower emissions by reducing nitrogen fertilizer will consequently lower crop yields over the next decade, hurting the agriculture sector and, more importantly, hurting farmers. So They're basically admitting, the Canadian government is admitting in their own freaking press releases that we're going to have lower crop yields.
But they told you in the lead of that press release that you're okay with it.
Right. You're okay with that, farmers in Canada.
Right. Can we put that press release back on the screen? That it's like, hey, every one of us makes, no, not the press release, two back.
There
yeah.
We go.
Canadian farmers have shown they're good stewards of the land and team player, key players is what they're saying.
I love how they started off.
We're all okay with it.
I love how they started off like, yeah, Canadian farmers have long showed us that they are good. They take care of the land and they care about Canada's natural resources.
But we're going to make them do something different.
But we're going to screw you over. So, and then, you know, Justin Trudeau, of course, was asked about these food shortages. He was asked about how this is going to affect Canadians. And of course, this is all part of the new liberal world order, right? And this is what he had to say about it. Listen to Dictator Trudeau.
You acknowledged earlier today Canadians facing higher food prices, energy prices amid global uncertainty right now. We're seeing lockdowns in Shanghai. We know that means more supply chain disruptions. What are average Canadians supposed to do right now? Inflation is not abating, a lot of uncertainty.
We've seen from the global pandemic to the war in Ukraine, significant disruptions of supply chains around the world, which is resulting in higher prices for consumers in democracies like ours, and resulting in significant shortages and projected shortages of food, of energy in places around the world. This is going to be a difficult time because of the war, because of the recovery from the pandemic, and Canadians will do what we always do. We'll be there for each other. We will continue to be there for the world, even as we support each other through these difficult times.
We'll be there for the world. We'll be there for each other as we screw you over. I mean,
I wonder if there's anyone who's like, oh, okay, that worried me before, but now that you said we're all going to be there for each other, I feel better.
Well, there's always the 30% of morons who support, like, you know, we're going to show you Biden's approval ratings in just a moment in the next story, but there's always like, you know, there's always like the 30%.
Okay, don't be condescending.
I will be condescending.
Don't.
Yes.
We talked about our mission statement.
All right, well, there will be people who are ignorant and pretty stupid and will
Clayton.
Continue. Oh, sorry, I'm trying. There will be morons. Damn it, I keep screwing that up.
There will be people who buy this.
There will be people that buy this crap. Damn it, I keep failing at that. Yes, someone says in the chat, be condescending. I mean, he literally stands there and says, you know what, we're just going to, yes, that's right. There's because of the war in Ukraine. Never mind the fact that we are literally about to put these same provisions on Canadian farmers. That's what's happening in the Netherlands, where they're pouring, and I'll put this video back up here. See if I can do that. This is what they're doing in Ukraine, where they're dumping huge amounts
that's
of...
That's not in Ukraine.
I'm sorry, in Ukraine. What did I say? In the Netherlands, where they're dumping manure at the footsteps of government offices, right? They're setting up, look at this, getting out the big digger, and they're putting in bags of manure to block border crossings so you can't come across the border. Would you like to drive through that? They're driving trucks all through the country.
All I can think about when I see that is I want that for my compost pile. Like, don't waste it. Give it to me.
Yeah. I mean, this is, and they took a page in the Netherlands. This, you're looking at the Netherlands. They took a page from Canada, from the trucker convoy. So that's what they did. They saw what Canada did and said, you are not going to take away our rights. Mm-hmm. And now Canada is doing the exact same thing that the Netherlands is doing. I just cannot fathom the thinking.
They have already actively discouraged protest against it. So is there still an appetite in Canada for something like this, knowing that Canada, the Canadian government has given itself more powers to survey, to take away bank accounts, to, you know, so, you know, once they've sort of tamped down uprising, then they can do things like this. They've given themselves the power to do things like this.
You know, the United Nations a couple of years ago published a report on hunger. And this, I flagged this today because I think it speaks to what they want, right? And this was the United Nations. We were talking about the World Economic Forum. They want to take away your rights. They want to take away your freedoms. They want to make sure that you own nothing. This is the United Nations wrote a report on the benefits of world hunger. They had the audacity to write a report on the benefits of world hunger. And I want to see...
What are they, I wonder?
Let me see if I can pull it up here on the screen. Here, just give me a second here, Philip. But I want to, before we do that, pull it up here. Where is it? It basically goes through, and I, for some reason I don't have it in front of me, but we'll link it up. Goes through and points out that the benefits of world hunger are that workers work harder. People work harder when they're hungry. And this is better for society, that when people are hungry... They make better workers, and we improve, you know, society with people who are starving.
That's supposed to be a metaphor.
A metaphor?
Like, you work harder when you're hungry. Like, not literally.
No, but
more
they
like
say,
hungry for success.
They literally pull scientists in and cite scientists in this report. But now, if you in the United Nations, then of course took this World Hunger Program down off of their website. So now, because of the backlash of it, if you go to their website now to look at it, it says, sorry, you cannot find this anymore. They took it down. So fortunately, the internet lives on and we have access to it and we can go through and read it. And it's stunning. But it really speaks to, I think, the heart of what these globalists want, which is they don't want you to own anything. They want to control and consolidate power. They want to, you know, they want to make an enormous amount of money. And they want you to be like sheep and to fall in line. That's exactly what this is.
Yes.
And so these farmers have to have this massive reduction. It's going to lead to food shortages. When you hurt farmers, you hurt food supply. And they are human beings that run businesses, and they supply the food for the world. And now you're going to put these artificial climate change nitrogen caps on them, and you're going to screw over the world. And you're going to screw Canada. You're going to screw the Netherlands. And guess who's being screwed the most right now is Africa, by the way.
Yes.
And we see it in Syria and on and on and on.
I mean, if the sum of these stories that we've done today about Sri Lanka, about the Netherlands, about Canada, don't convince you that you need to have a talk in your family about what are our plans to reduce our dependence on things that are controlled by the government, I don't know. You know, I don't know what you're waiting for, because these are the inflection points that us as humans need to have. How do we then make sure that we can survive if there are economic collapses that are happening around the world where we live?
Yeah. You know, I will say, and we'll just talk a little bit about like what our family is doing. I mean, we've been trying to grow a garden to be more reliant.
Trying to.
Absolutely. But like my sister-in-law just made some amazing pickles. Like, you know,
yes.
canned cucumbers and pickles, and like working on that and working on canning and really trying to, because we cannot rely on these people anymore.
Yeah,
we cannot rely on
these governments. We have chickens for eggs. We have, she just bought one of those Berkey water filters, which is very overwhelming to learn about. But, you know, these are things that it's time to start talking about. What are your plans to reduce, you know, as the government continues to strip us of the life that we know, right? And so I don't pretend to know what those solutions are for any one person or one family, but inside your family, I hope these conversations continue. And not in the sort of hysteria of the prepper community, but whatever that means for you.
I hope it is with the hysteria of a prep, because I feel like, you know, this, I think preppers get crapped on and talked down to by these globalists and these elites who are like, ah, oh, those preppers.
But I know there's a contingency of preppers who are like just waiting to rise up against the, well.
Do you know that?
Sort of I do. Because okay. I read The Hive.
Okay.
And there's like people who do it because they absolutely believe that they're going to need to know how to take care of their families. And then there's another sort of like, we just are waiting for the government to do stuff that we can, you know, start an uprising with
okay.
weapons. I do think, I don't know. Okay. I don't know.
Put a pin in that.
Okay. I will.
I'm trying to save you. Put a pin in that.
All right.
I mean, look, we saw, yes, I lived in Montana. I know. I mean, the thing is, there are people that they don't want the government involved in their family's life. They don't want anything to do with that. And they don't want them coming on their land. Like, keep away from me. You know, when I lived in Helena, Montana, I saw that all the time. I talked to ranchers. I talked to people who said, you know, I don't want their involvement. I take care of my family.
Yes.
And I don't want them on my land. I don't want them telling me what to do with my waterway, telling me what I need to do about wolves or any of this stuff. Stay away, stay away, stay away. Same thing when I lived in West Virginia.
Wolves?
Same thing. Wolves. Yeah, it was a big movement to bring wolves back and the whole thing. It was when I was there in the early 2000s and I lived in Montana. That's a little Montana aside for you.
All right. We both went on tangents there.
All right. Well, let us know your thoughts on that. Subscribe to the channel. Please, please subscribe and smash that like button. And up here on the screen, when you subscribe, your name will pop up here. So, yes.
And we appreciate it.
Yes, indeed. But first, we have one more story I want to get to. This is on the White House and what they're doing right now to hide President Biden's mental decline. You're not going to believe this story. Actually, maybe you will. We'll see if you believe this story. Just give us a second on that. But first, I want to tell you about this. Because men right now, this is important for men as you get a little bit older. You know, getting older changes your body. And maybe you're getting a little bit of the dad bod. Maybe you're feeling a little bit, you know, less like yourself lately. You don't have the time to work out. You feel sluggish. You're tired. Well, once you try Nugenix, you are going to feel revived, and you're going to start working out like you never before did. It's unbelievable. And it's not all your fault. You know, as men age, our bodies naturally lose free testosterone. So with Nugenix, the man hormone comes back. It happens to every man. It can make it more difficult to stay in shape and be energetic and active. So if you want more energy to counter all that negative physical effects of aging, Nugenix Total T Testosterone Booster with Testofen. Testofen will help you turn back the clock, re-energize your workouts, get your better results at the gym, and help you look and feel like the man you really want to be. So, Nugenix Total T contains man-boosting key ingredients, okay? It has been validated in 5 clinical studies shown to boost free testosterone levels in men. Because Nugenix Total T boosts free testosterone that the aging process robs you of. You're going to feel stronger, leaner, and more energy and drive, and more passion as well. Your partner is going to notice the difference as well. Nugenix Total T is the number one selling testosterone booster at GNC. Nugenix Total T can help re-energize your life and help you get back the powerful, confident, good-looking warrior that you used to be. So now you can get a complimentary bottle of it, by the way, of Nugenix Total T when you text the word redacted. So just grab your phone. You get a free bottle. Just grab your phone and text the word redacted to 231-231. Can you tell I never make phone calls anymore? 231-231. So just text the word. Just grab your little text device and go to the little text field. And where it says to, who are you going to send it to? You're going to type in the numbers 231-231. Text the word redacted. And you're going to get a free bottle of their Nugenix Thermo, their most powerful fat incinerator ever with key ingredients to help you get back in shape fast. Absolutely free. Text the word redacted. 231-231. That's redacted to 231-231. Our thanks to Nugenix for supporting the show and everything that we do here. By the way, we wouldn't be able to do this show without our great show sponsors, right?
That's right. We would not.
We would not be able to do this. We would not be able to have our great team here and do all of that. So when you support our show sponsors who support us and support independent journalism, then we get to do that here. So, all right. What, something going on over there?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm just curious if you're trying to tell me something. Sometimes you send me notes that I don't see until after the show that are important during the show.
You know what? I hope that sometimes people screenshot the stink eye that Clayton shoots to me across the, like, what are you up to? Like, even just during the first interview, we were talking to the journalist, and I was writing down books, and Clayton gives me this, like, what are you doing?
Because like, I always feel like she's texting attention. I always feel like she's texting her sister or something.
Okay, but if I am, then, you know, let market forces either force me out of this job or you fire me. But it's not for
market
you.
Market forces. I'm just always curious because sometimes you'll
send... I feel like I have the meanest
Sometimes you send me notes that I don't see because I don't have my text alerts on during the show. And then I'll see it after the show, and it was a note about a story that we're about to do because you're moving an element around. There's some note about something, and I'm like, I didn't see it.
But then under the, you know.
No one can see that.
And if I'm typing something else, mind your own business.
Let's see what you're typing.
What am I typing? I was literally on the show.
All right.
Thing.
Good. Stay on. Keep your eye on your own paper, Clayton.
Yeah. He's rude. You know what? I did enjoy the break of like being coworkers with you and just being married is sometimes nice. I'm changing my screensaver.
No.
Yes, I'm going to.
Don't. All right. I apologize. Okay. I apologize. All right. Well, a new poll out today on President Biden is deeply troubling for Democrats, and it shows huge, huge trouble for them heading into the midterm elections. So the New York Times even out with this report this afternoon. You know it's bad when the New York Times is all over you. So is CNN this afternoon. Most Democrats don't want Biden in 2024, new poll shows. And they're scrambling right now. I mean, they're scrambling. And when you look at the, when they're asked, do you feel like the country is going in the right direction or the wrong direction? Take a look at this graph. Right direction? No, that's the blue. You don't want that. Like no. If you're a politician and you're hoping to win re-election, you don't want the wrong direction graph sticking straight up in the air like that. There's a lot of discussion now among liberal elites as to, oh my God, are we facing another Jimmy Carter moment here?
Yes, but I feel like this most Democrats headline, don't want Biden, could have been repeated, right, in 2019. That's not news. Democrats didn't want Biden in, for the 2020 election, but still somehow got stuck with him and voted for him, right?
Well, corporatists.
He was never really popular within the party. I mean, he was like...
No, they didn't want him at all. Yeah, it was like, no, we don't want this guy. We don't want this guy. He's too old. He can't handle it. There's no way.
Right. But, and... he doesn't speak in... complex sentences. He speaks in independent clauses, which don't end up making sense as right. a sentence.
Well, and there was a lot of question about his cognitive abilities even back then, right? I mean, he was saying things that didn't make sense on the stage. And of course, it was amazing to watch the mainstream media. Like, they're like CNN was like, you can't talk about this. Like, be nice. Like, don't talk about this. You weren't allowed to bring it up. You weren't allowed to have discussions about it. It was.
And I frankly don't like talking about it now, right? But it concerns me because of, well, the state of the nation, right?
Well, and who's running things? Like, do you honestly believe, like, when there was a Wall Street Journal article a few weeks ago that was an opinion piece written by Joe Biden and it was in the Wall Street Journal, come on. No one believes for a second that he sat down and wrote an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
He put his name on something that someone else wrote.
That his administration decided that, you know, okay, but you can make the effort that you can make the point that you voted for his administration and that there are competent people inside of it and that's who is producing this work, right?
So I guess you're voting for George W. Bush. It's not actually George W. Bush running the show. It's Dick Cheney. It's Condoleezza Rice. It's a whole group of warmongers that you're actually supporting. It's not George W. Bush. You're supporting Donald Rumsfeld. You're supporting Condi Rice, warmongers.
Right. I don't need to think that he can make a nut graph, right? That's mm-hmm. fine. But I need to sort of know that he understands the government action that are leading to inflation and war and all of those types of things. And, you know, I don't know. I worry that he's sort of reproducing his hits from the highlights of his career, and we're all suffering from it. And also, I've said this before, I'm concerned that the average age of a congressional or a voted-in representative is close to 70, right, when the average age of an American is 35, and we do not have representative electorate.
Right. Barbara says in our chat, he speaks in dependent clauses. Independent clauses can function as complete sentences.
That's what I meant.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Not independent clauses.
Dependent
because of course.
Clauses. Thank you, Barbara.
Yes. Thank you
for keeping
that.
Us honest on that. So he
and keeping us grammatical.
Exactly. So he was at a press conference just the other day, and this happened. We'll play it. See if you can catch the moment. And we might have to play it again, Philip. So be ready to. We'll play it again. Many of you may have seen it this weekend. We haven't talked about it here on the show, but I wanted to talk about what happened after this soundbite occurred at the White House. So watch the president during this speech. See if you can spot the moment.
It is noteworthy that the percentage of women who registered to vote and cast a ballot is consistently higher than the percentage of the men who do so. End of quote. Repeat the line. Women are not without electoral and or political or maybe precise, not and or political power. That's another way of saying that you, the women of America, can determine the outcome of this issue.
Okay.
I watched that a few times through as well and watched Kamala Harris's face, and she doesn't even flinch.
No, because if you've seen
some training.
Well, because if you've seen her over the past few weeks, I mean, she can't. When she was asked about abortion, I mean, she was asked about a number of questions, and I don't even know what she's talking about. And so she's probably just as out to lunch as he is on a lot of these.
I don't know. I'm just wondering, did they catch it? Because when you're like, ooh, Sorry,
so
my colleague did
let's,
that.
Let's replay the video and see if you can catch it. If you can't, well, I'm going to give you some context here in a second, but let's roll it again, Philip.
It is noteworthy that the percentage of women who registered to vote and cast a ballot is consistently higher than the percentage of the men who do so. End of quote. Repeat the line. Women are not without electoral and or political or maybe precise, not and or political power. That's another way of saying that you, the women of America, can determine the outcome of this issue.
All right. So sort of in the middle there, he says he was reading a quote and he's in the teleprompter, right? It said, end quote. You don't read that part. Like, that's the end of the quote. And then it was for emphasis for him to repeat that line, right? So he said he read that part out. Like and there's jokes online about him being like Ron Burgundy, right? If you've ever seen
Anchorman. It is kind of a cruel way to run prompter, though, because the prompter is moving, right? So he would have to go and find the top of the sentence in a moving prompter. So I'm going to give him a little bit of credit there because reading a teleprompter is hard. And if he was reading the moving prompter and then had to go and find the beginning of that sentence, we don't know how big the prompter was.
The problem is he didn't, right?
Right, and he probably should have known not to say repeat the line.
Repeat, end quote, repeat the line.
Yes.
So he's literally saying what's in the prompter, which is giving him emphasis on what he should be doing. So he's just
But they
reads.
Shouldn't have wrote repeat the line. They just should have copied and pasted the line.
Right. Because as people are trying to defend him saying, well, yeah, no, he just said, let me repeat the line. He didn't say, let me repeat the line. So here's how the White House.
And he didn't, in fact, repeat anything related to that.
So exactly. That my point. He never went back and then repeated anything. He just said, let me repeat that, and then went on. So even if he did say, let me repeat that, he never repeated it. The bottom line is the White House then published a transcript of this, and they totally hid what he said, and they changed what he said to make it seem less, less senile. So here's what the White House said, and this is a tweet from Jerry Dunleavy. White House transcript of Biden remarks is now incorrectly aligned with what this White House assistant press secretary falsely claimed on Twitter, despite the video showing Biden clearly stating end of quote, repeat the line, and not using the word not, and let me repeat the line. So then, of course, you can see on the right-hand side of the screen, this is the official whitehouse.gov transcript of it where they stick in this extra word just to, you know, make him look less senile, I guess. Let me repeat the line. And he didn't say that. And again, this is the White House. There's been a number of cases now where he has said, if this was just like a one-off instance, this happened under the Trump administration, of course. We saw the White House also changing transcripts under the Trump administration. It happened under the Biden administration, the Obama administration. It's happened in every White House. They've changed these transcripts. So let's be absolutely fair on that point. But this White House has now had to walk back a number of really scary things that this president has said. Getting rid of Putin, right? Regime change in Russia. This guy cannot remain in power any longer.
Right.
There's been a number.
Images of the president walking into a room with cue cards that said, take your seat, right?
Sit down now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the leader of the free world. And so I think you kind of sit back and you say, when we talk about the cabal, or we talk about a deep state, these guys are here for like a fleeting amount of time. They're in office for a short amount of time. It's the unelected people that are running the show. It's the military-industrial complex. It's the State Department. It's the Pentagon people. It's those career people that are there. They know that these politicians come in for a short amount of time, and the real people running the show are behind the scenes. These are these puppets that they put out there in front of a television camera. We believe are running the show, but they're not these elected leaders, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, when you think about it that way, right? You don't think that Joe Biden is actually the one, the way we've just talked about. He's not the one writing essays. It's his administration. But at the same time, I just wonder, you know, if we extrapolate what this means for the upcoming midterm election, will people understand that they are either voting with or against this president? How much will it hurt Democrats? And is there a way for an opponent to go up against Joe Biden and say, look, you know, the guy is past his prime. We need someone a bit more with it. We appreciate his lifetime of service, whether you do or not, right? And not do it in a way that's ageist, not do it in a way that's mocking the way, you know, maybe a President Trump would. Is there a way to point this out and say, look, it's just, it's time, right? This guy needs an emeritus badge. Let's move it on.
I mean, yeah, this is the administration you got right now. These are the people you voted for, right? These are the people that are running the show right now. And so I what can you point to if you're a Democrat where you're like proud of what, that's why I say like 30%, there's always that 27 to 30% that will always say that the party that they voted for, like is fine. Like same with Republicans when George W. Bush low approval. Like, I'm like, who are these people?
Right.
Who is these people that got us into the worst, one of the worst wars in American history?
Like, no, I think that there are things that I can't, that are not top of mind, but I've seen sort of quips on Twitter about Democrats who are proud of what has been accomplished during the Biden years. I can't repeat them, but I've seen them.
Hey, let us know in the chat. Like, what are you, what are you excited about with Democrats and President Biden?
I listen to some of the, you know, Democratic strategy podcasts. I'm interested in what they think were successes. There are some.
Okay. I'd love
to hear it. I can't come up with them.
I would
think they're
like
pandemic related and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Someone says, dude, you need a tan. I was on in the sun for a couple of weeks. So that's why. Do I need a tan?
I think that.
Oh, they're talking about Biden. Are they talking about Biden needs a tan? I hope it wasn't.
Maybe it's not you.
I hope it wasn't me because I'm like, I
don't tell him that because he doesn't wear his sunscreen properly.
Are you kidding me? I put on 50.
Once in the beginning of the day. Not again.
You don't know.
You know that the SPF, the number, refers to the amount of minutes you should be in the sun before you reapply.
Okay.
So. All okay, right. Well, that does it for our show today.
Yes, that does. We want to remind you to subscribe to the channel, please. Just hit the old subscribe button. And please turn on the little bell notification. David reminds me of that. You have to turn on the little bell notification because if you don't do that, there's like different options now. I think when you have to hover over it and choose to receive alerts when we go live and all of that. So, and also on Rumble, please make sure that you're subscribed there and everywhere else fine podcasts are played. So our thanks to all of you. Yes, rumble.com/redacted is our Rumble. Our website, again, is redacted.inc. That's redacted.inc. Head over there to become a member. Again, free to sign up. And if you want to become a channel supporter for as little as a cup of coffee per month, you can support what we do here as independent journalists.
Like Deep End Dive.
Yes. Thank you, Deep End Dive, for being a new subscriber. Thank you so much for being a supporter of the show. We really, really appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. We will see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Global Mean Time. Have a great night, everyone. Thanks for watching. Wear your sunscreen.